Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everyone. This is Lauren Petrovic, and welcome to another episode of Responsible Luxury. I'm going to keep this short in terms of my normal preamble. My guest today is Tian Ong, is a chemical engineer with a background in chemical process design and development and commercialization of new technologies. Tian Ong earned her bachelor's in chemical engineering from MIT. Her experience is quite impressive, and she started her journey at the Cambridge Chemical Technologies, Inc., a startup technology-based process engineering firm, and at Technip FMC, a leading energy technology provider. Tian has contributed to developing over 15 engineering packages for technology transfer of plant designs. She has advised domestic and international clients, providing engineering assistance from preliminary design phases through commissioning and startup. In her most recent role, Tian serves as the manager of strategic initiatives and R&D at Malta Inc., a renewable energy startup company with a mission to accelerate the future of energy storage through its long-term energy storage technology. Malta is making a significant impact in the deployment of industrial-scale power generation systems and operating electrothermal energy storage systems. Their technology, coupled with renewable energy sources, enables delivery of 24/7 green energy. You may be curious about the connection between Tian's work and the jewelry and luxury industry. I believe collaborating across industries is crucial for advancing sustainability and developing innovative solutions to propel progress, not only in our own industries, but also globally. I also believe it's valuable to foster collaboration across various sectors to investigate how the industry can promote more responsible consumption and production practices.
I think there's also two ways of thinking about it. Like, you can think about the supply of power or the supply of heat, and our technology allows for both. So predominantly the power aspect, but it also allows for an offtake of process heat as an additional stream that could be integrated into, say, a manufacturing site, depending on what their needs are.
Tian's expertise in alternative energy solutions presents an innovative approach to addressing manufacturing challenges and the carbon footprint of our industry. Tian brings with her a wide range of experience and perspectives to the table, shedding light on alternative energy solutions. In our conversation, we delve into the energy crisis, global energy grids, the challenges and opportunities in combating climate change and achieving net carbon neutrality. You can find Tian online at LinkedIn, and Malta can be found at maltainc.com. I will link all that down in the show notes below. Without further ado, please enjoy this very wide-ranging conversation on climate and renewable energy with Tian Ong. I'm really happy to have you on today. You are certainly a very unique guest on the show, considering the industry you're in. I want to dive right into it. So can you share with us a little bit more about your path into the renewable energy space?
Sure. So first off, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm really happy to be speaking with you today. As a little bit of background, I completed my undergrad at MIT in chemical engineering. So I'm a process engineer by training. After that, I spent about 8 years of my career working on designing chemical plants and scaling up and commercializing new technologies at Cambridge Chemical Technologies and Technip FMC. And then in those roles, I worked on putting together safe and energy efficient designs and developing front end engineering packages. At that point in my career, I decided that I wanted to work on something that has a bit more of a greater impact, something that has more direct potential for positive impact on society. And an opportunity at the time came up to join Malta, which is a company working on a long duration energy storage system, about 4.5 years ago. And since then, I've spent about 3.5 years on the engineering team, from like a senior process engineer to a technical lead, working on developing our product, going through various iterations and doing the simulation and engineering design of that. And then as of last year, I transitioned to my current role as manager of strategic initiatives and R&D, and currently am working on focusing on longer term R&D efforts, trying to find grant funding opportunities and doing partnerships and collaborations with various companies and engagement with external stakeholders, such as the United Nations 24/7 Carbon Free Energy Compact and Sustainable Energy for All.
Amazing. So that is, first of all, being at MIT, I'm sure, has given you such a strong foundation. And I mean, brilliant mind, you know, being in the space that you're in. So looking broadly from a high level, the renewable energy space, I'm sure it's very capital intensive when you start working on projects, and especially the R&D, you know, point of it. But has there been unique challenges that has crossed your path that you've encountered already, maybe in your role at Malta or just in the industry in general?
Yeah. So for the specific sector that I'm in, I think one of the biggest challenges is that the technology doesn't exist yet. Like, we're working on developing new technologies, which comes with its own set of challenges, struggles. But basically, I think as well as like being in a startup, I think the nature of it is that we go through various fundraising cycles. We depend on investors to give us a bit of runway in order to develop our technology. So there's a lot of different factors that then come into play, which is the cost aspect of our product, I think, becomes a huge consideration point in terms of determining impacts on our technology development decisions, the schedule and the timeline of when we anticipate the product to be ready will also play a role. So I think specifically when you're trying to develop new technologies, the time to market, like being the first to market, is pretty much the critical aspect of it. A lot of companies doing similar development are all trying to be the first in the market. And then, like, I think with startups, it's a very dynamic atmosphere. I think things change pretty rapidly depending on various types of decisions and factors. So there's a lot of pivoting, a lot of adjustments, but I think that all comes with everything. So it's a bit of a whirlwind, but it's been a fun ride.
And before you started in the space, I'm curious why you started, maybe inspiration and motivations behind your work to start pursuing this pathway.
I think I've always been fairly environmentally conscious. And so I think landing into the energy industry, it feels like it's a good alignment with where I want to be these days. So in the past, when I was in college, I participated and led 2 service leadership projects with high school students in Malaysia that was focused on raising environmental awareness. I think in general, I try to think about sustainability in all aspects of life. I think there's another aspect of it is that I've gotten way more into hobbies over the last 5 years, like climbing, long distance cycling, hiking, etc. And it's a lot more obvious to me what the direct impacts of climate change are on different aspects of the things that I love to do. The ski season is shortening. Ice climbing is becoming very iffy now because there's not enough sufficient days of cold temperature in order to maintain the conditions of the ice. So I think it's just like, it's a lot more noticeable what the drastic like weather fluctuation and extreme events are these days, which causes a bit of concern. And I think being in the energy space then allows me to contribute and work towards being a part of the solution.
Yes. I want to jump right into it. So looking at the technologies that are help building and bringing the renewable energy into communities, Can you give us an overview of the energy storage technologies and perhaps also some of their benefits for sustainable development?
So there's several different types of renewable energy storage technologies that are out there with different applications and timescales. And generally, the larger picture idea is like we want to move away from using coal, and we also want to move away from using anything that burns fossil fuels, even natural gas, ideally. And with renewable energy, such as solar, wind, hydro power, we're able to then get cleaner solutions to providing electricity. I think the most common ones are like pumped hydro, electrochemical batteries, thermal, mechanical types of storage. And I think all of these have different consideration points for determining what the best solution is for a given customer or region. And it allows for us to capture some of the renewable energy sources from solar, wind, geothermal, et cetera, and then convert that into electricity.
So the shift that's happening now, I'm really interested in digging deeper in that, because me coming in from the standpoint of the diamond and jewelry business and, of course, larger luxury markets, I'm invested to see how manufacturing, whether that's diamond manufacturing, jewelry manufacturing, even in the fashion business as well, how the stakeholders are able to incorporate more of these into their factories or maybe manufacturing sites. And leading into this, this is why I wanted to bring you into this larger discussion, because someone with deep insights into the data and actually being in the deep into the research and the data behind renewable energy, I think that this is definitely the future for how future businesses are going to be run. And also, too, just in order to achieve a more responsible production and just more of a sustainability globally, too. So can you explain the process of Multis technology and how that could potentially pair up with a diamond manufacturing company, for example?
In general, Multis technology is a heat pump system that allows us to convert electricity from the grid, ideally from renewable sources like solar and wind, into thermal energy. And it allows for us to store that energy as thermal energy for a longer duration, somewhere around 10 to 12 hours at a time. And then when electricity is needed from the grid, so when demand is high, you can reconvert the thermal energy back into electricity and sell it back to the grid. Currently, the product that we are working on might be a little bit larger than what is needed for the processes for jewelry and diamond industry, but we are working on looking at different size capacities, so smaller capacities that could then perhaps be paired well within some of these manufacturing sites. I think there's also two ways of thinking about it. Like, you can think about the supply of power or the supply of heat, and our technology allows for both. So predominantly the power aspect, but it also allows for an offtake of process heat as an additional stream that could be integrated into, say, a manufacturing site, depending on what their needs are.
And I want to ask you more about the energy grid, because I think that if you're a bit far removed from the work that you're doing, I think that the concept of the grid system globally might be hazy for some people. So globally, the grid is connected with all the countries.
It varies from region to region. So I think there's certain areas like in Australia where they just have a single system. It's a lot easier for them to affect change because they have one system that's interconnected with all of the users, the consumers. In places like the US, we have multiple different entities that then contribute into the overall electric grid. I think within the US, it's a little bit harder to affect some of these changes that we want to see in the long run. And that's why it's like important to have advocacy and ambassadors that are pushing forward for all of these changes to happen among the energy companies and other organizations out there, like the UN.
Right. And when heat and energy is captured into these storage solutions, and how long can this energy be stored for?
Currently, the most common type is lithium ion. And those battery storage solutions are in the shorter to midterm range. I think there's been a lot of work recently in terms of trying to extend that range. So we're talking about 4 hours to 8 hours. The technology that we're working on developing is looking at the mid to longer term range, from 10 hours to potentially scaling up to 50 hours, 100 hours, et cetera, in the longer term. I think there is variance, I think, depending on what type of storage technology we're talking about.
And thinking too about implementing this with different companies or organizations that you've come across, what's been some key challenges associated with implementing these renewable energy solutions?
So solar and wind, I think right now, are the least expensive type of electricity out there. Generally, utilities want to adopt them, but they're intermittent sources of energies, meaning that you can't always rely on the sun to shine or the wind to blow. It comes and goes. And in order to harness those types of resources, I think you do need to supplement the grid with additional types of technologies. And like we've mentioned, that part would be energy storage systems. So long-duration energy storage systems will help convert intermittent power into 24/7 reliable baseload power. And I think that is the challenge that a lot of companies are working on right now.
Malta right now is working with the large energy companies.
So we're a technology provider, and we're working on developing our system and looking to integrate that with potential customers would be utilities and other local governments that are trying to bring in such a system to deploy within their cities.
How readily accepting are they to start adopting and implementing these into their local communities? Have you seen a lot of pushback from local government officials or...
So I think there's interest. I think generally across the board, people are interested in implementing renewable energy storage systems. The challenges that are in play, I think, would be the cost of such a system. Another part of this is because this is a new technology, there's often some hesitance to adopt a new technology right off the bat. So there's several steps that companies need to get past in order to prove their technologies. And so I think that extends the timeline for the adoption of new tech.
I want to hear a little bit more about a grant you were working on and also the future model you were thinking of. You mentioned this idea of it being more of a mosaic connectedness within the industry. In other words, there is no one big player dominating the space. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So starting off with the grant that I had been working on was based on an idea of pulling together various industry players and organizations that are all focused on a common interest. So part of our technology uses molten salt in order to store the heat that's generated from the electricity. It's built off of existing technologies from the concentrated solar power industries that's currently being implemented in a couple of different sites right now. But there are known challenges with molten salt technology. There have been tank failures that have happened in recent times that has then impacted the ability for those CSP plants to remain up and running. And part of the grant was to pull together all of these entities that are all very interested in making sure that molten salt technology works so that we can integrate that into future systems, to then consolidate resources and more efficiently focus on a set of pre-competitive R&D research topics that would allow us collectively to advance our industry forward. And so that's kind of a general idea. And I think this goes back to the thought that for all of this work around developing new technologies within the renewable energy space, I think we need to have more collaboration between Department of Energy, startups, industry partners, research institutions in order to all effectively move forward together. I think it makes more sense to consolidate resources and give ourselves the best shot for a chance at success.
Yeah, I think building upon what you said is that collaboration effort between the startups, agreement with the government, different funding opportunities, and also something I wanted to do is bridge that gap between our industry, the diamond and jewelry industry, and also that energy space. So expanding and partnering and collaborating with other industries as well, mm-hmm. I think is super key and super important if we really want to buckle down on this and make this long-term vision of energy storage a reality. Mm-hmm. Looking into integrating long-term energy storage solutions into operations within the luxury space, can you explain the physical framework of it and how that can tie into a manufacturing house or in its operations?
So I was reading up more about this, and it was really surprising to see that 95% of the carbon emissions within the luxury space comes from the acquisition and mining and metals production. Right. And then the remainder of the 5% of carbon emissions then comes from the design, production, and transportation. So I think there's a very obvious section where work can be done in order to reduce the amount of carbon emissions. And I think that requires just like getting better insight into what parts of the supply chain and production process is utilizing, say, electricity from sources that are from coal and fossil fuels, and whether or not we can switch that over to using electricity that's generated from renewable sources. I think depending on the types of industrial processes, you can also look into adaptations or integrations with systems that produce process heat from renewable sources as well.
A lot of the mining happens in places like Africa, Russia, mm-hmm. some parts in Canada. Where around the world do you see there being a lot of challenge with trying to implement this technology? For example, I know like the Global South is a big challenge now.
I think it really depends on the region and what sources of energy are available. I think for certain areas like Spain, Portugal, California, there's solar is like a predominantly abundant and available resource. But in areas like Southeast Asia, where they have months at a time of like monsoon season, like you're not going to be able to utilize the sun there as much. So I think a lot of it depends on the region that you're looking at, what availability there is for various types of resources. So in certain areas, like geothermal might be the better choice. In certain areas, like solar and wind might be the better option to go for.
The technology, it's suited to fit anyone, right? So if you and I were setting up a manufacturing plant, right, mm-hmm. maybe making t-shirts somewhere on the plot of land, there would be the solar panels, I'm sure, right? How is that operationally connected to the larger grid?
So there could be multiple ways of looking at this. You could have a manufacturing plant that is directly connected to, say, like solar panels that then connect into an energy storage system, which then allows for balancing out the intermittency of the renewable resource. And then that feeds directly into the plant. Or you could have a system where it's specifically purchasing electricity that's generated from renewable resources by having our product located elsewhere within the region, but connected to the local grid, and then have that be a resource to pull from for the manufacturing site.
Have you guys previously worked with any type of production or manufacturing facilities?
We're engaging with several potential customers right now in terms of figuring out how best to integrate into their systems. And so that's sort of in the development works where they share with us what they have available on site and what their needs are in terms of energy usage, in terms of if they also need process heat. And then we're evaluating ways to integrate into those systems, but they are dependent on which customer that we're working with. So the solution varies slightly from one to the other.
I want to open up the conversation further into Malta's future initiatives and what we can expect in the next 5 to 10 years. Can you share with us some insights on the future of energy, including advancements in current technologies and the potential impact for the broader global community?
So I think we are quite a bit behind on the targets that have been set in order to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. At this year's COP, the UN said that all hope is not lost, but we really need to get moving. We need to take action. And so I think that's why we need more of these new technologies in order to accelerate the pace of change. I think as part of what's driving the future of energy, we need more ambassadors and influencers, consumers demanding change such that collectively we as a society act with more of a sense of urgency. I think many countries, governments, and organizations, like, we're all aware of what the issue is. And there are existing goals and targets to push for decarbonization. I think the time is running out to meet some of these targets in order to be on track for that. So I think part of this is by 2030, which is only 5.5 years away, the US needs to go from generating 20% of its electricity from carbon-free sources today to at least 75%. That's a long way to go within the 5.5 year span. And this target has been set for quite some time now. And the amount of time that we have to affect this change is getting shorter. So I think everybody involved in the space, we just need to act. At least like within the US, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, they've invested billions of dollars into developing the new technologies that we've been talking about. Just recently, there was like $6 billion granted for 33 projects to decarbonize energy-intensive industries, to reduce industrial greenhouse gas emissions and revitalize industrial communities and strengthen the nation's manufacturing competitiveness. So this includes clean energy demonstrations from various types of companies partnering with each other. And I think that's like a step in the right direction. And in general, there just needs to be more interconnection between the nonprofit, private, and public sectors for us to move forward together.
So right now, we're at 20% use of renewable mm-hmm. energy. And you said in 5.5 years, it needs to be at 75. So two big things, I think, is definitely one, lack of education about the impacts of not going and using these new technologies. And two, I think the cost is a huge barrier. How do you see the industry combating that? Obviously, this is something that's needed, but what can we do to help, you know, perhaps subsidize the cost and getting everyone on board?
There's a few ways to navigate around this. So usually for a new technology, because it's being done for the first time, typically the technology development costs are going to be high. The cost of components are also another factor. There's, at least on our end, we've been approaching this through various paths, one of which is looking at grant opportunities from funding grants opportunities, looking at forming technology partnership agreements with some original equipment manufacturers so that we work towards solving this problem together. And then in some cases, there's also looking for other financing options from banks and trying to navigate around pricing the first product at a price point that our customers would potentially want to invest in. I think what helps with building out this picture is to then also look at the longer term future iterations of the product. I think that typically the first product is the most expensive. And then as you continue to learn and improve upon your technology and develop more of a supply chain for the materials that's going into the technology, it gets a little bit easier to then work on reducing the costs down for future systems, like making it more efficient, optimizing, developing partnerships or a relationship with vendors. So if they know that you're going to buy 50 of a specific item, they're more likely to give a better price than if it's just a one-off case. So it's just looking into all of these different avenues and trying to pull that together in order to overall reduce the cost. I think that is the strategy that we've gone with.
I think that's a really good
point that you bring up is, you know, in the beginning of anything that's new, any new technology, it's going to be expensive because it's brand new to the market. It's taken a lot of time and effort to get this together, and it's usually custom made. Of course, moving forward into the future, once you reiterate, you figure out how to make it better, maybe how to make it quicker, more efficient, and of course, hopefully drive down that cost as well through partnerships and various other ways. Where are you guys in the process? And I'm curious to hear, like, from where you sit with the research, the R&D point, what's your process?
So I would say the timeline, or like the cost projections that we've been looking at for costing down, would be somewhere along the lines of looking at stepwise ways of decreasing costs within the next 3 to 5 years, and then within the next 10 years, 20 years. But I think part of that is also anticipating the number of products that you'd be able to put out into the market and navigating the various factors that come into play with that. We're currently developing a demonstration system, and then eventually and simultaneously working on our full-scale plant.
So Tian, how do you see the future of energy looking like over the next decade? How do you see it evolving? What's your vision for the future?
I think in general, where I see things going is phasing out reliance on fossil fuel power plants, trying to retire those plants, and then increasing our reliance on renewable energy sources and implementing energy storage systems in order to capture some of the surplus energy that is currently being wasted in a way with curtailment. And I think in general, trying to improve the overall energy efficiency of existing systems. I think there's always ways to incrementally improve what we already have out there.
So there's one question that I ask every guest that comes on the show. And that is, if you could visually depict the industry's ideal state for all to see, what would it say and what would it convey? Right. So think of a billboard in the middle of Times Square. What's something that you would want the public to know about your industry?
So I think there's a lot of important work that is happening right now from all of the different players involved in the energy industry. I think there's collectively as a whole, we are all working towards a common goal. And I think that has the potential to change what the future could look like. Again, most of the clean technologies that are needed to stop the climate crisis is not widely deployed today or has not yet been developed. And we just need all of the different players to come in, sort of like puzzle pieces fitting in together with energy technology companies, governments, organizations, ambassadors like you, bringing this to other people's attention. All of these little components then I think will help push us all collectively towards better solutions to the overall climate change problem. And I think our world has always come together to solve big problems. And this is one of the ways that ideally we can be at a better spot in the next 20 to 50 years.
Yes. So hearing you say that, I imagine a globe with puzzle pieces. I think that it's going to be input and insight from many different stakeholders, and it's not just one party to fix this. I think that's a really great way to leave off today. Tian, do you have any last closing remarks or final thoughts that you want to leave with us today?
Yeah, I would maybe bring this back to a more personal level. I think every individual can make a difference in the world in terms of sustainability and finding different ways to incorporate that into your lives, into our lives. I've been fortunate enough to live in a city that has good public transportation, so I haven't had a need for a car. So I think just little choices that we make every day can contribute a lot to the world globally. And every little bit that we do counts. So I think generally just want to leave that as a message, hopefully that everybody can play their part. Yeah. And making the world a better place.
Tian, thank you so much. This was a wonderful conversation, and best of luck to you with all the amazing world-changing things going on with Malta, and we'll talk soon.
Lauren, thank you again for this opportunity to speak. Again, I think the work that you're doing as a UN Global Goals Ambassador is so important for raising awareness within your industry and the integrated industries as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Responsible Luxury. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at Laurenti New York or connect with me directly. And don't forget to follow at Laurenti New York for the latest updates. I will talk to you soon. See you next week.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.